She found food and a mattress. She stroked Hua's warm fur for comfort. She didn't realize how exhausted she was until she lay down. She slept like a squirrel in winter. Before dawn, Ping was walking again. The forest track was peaceful after the bustle of the Imperial Road. There were no shouted greetings as travelers passed by, no clop of galloping horses or creak of wheels, no panting of Imperial messengers. The only sounds were the calls of birds and animals as the dawn roused them. Most of the trees in the forest were ancient junipers. Their foliage had a bluish tinge and their bark hung in peeling strips. Ping chewed on juniper berries. They had a bitter taste, but they kept her alert. Apart from the birds and the unseen animals that rustled through the undergrowth, the silent trees were the only witnesses to her journey. Late in the afternoon, Ping heard the sound of rushing water. She left the path to look for the stream. Three deer were drinking on the opposite bank. They didn't notice Ping at first. Then suddenly, they all looked up together. Ping thought she must have made a noise to disturb them, but the startled creatures weren't looking in her direction. They were looking behind them. The trees were dense. Their branches crisscrossed each other like latticework. Some of the dark branches moved. The deer darted away. Ping peered into the forest. Something was moving. An animal stepped out of the trees. It padded toward the edge of the stream on large paws. It stopped to sniff the air. It was huge. Its fur wasn't yellow, as she had been told, but honey brown, striped with black bands. It crouched down and lapped at the water with a large pink tongue. The markings on the animal's lowered head were beautiful. They looked as if an artist had painted them on with a brush dipped in black ink. The tiger looked up. Though she hadn't moved, hadn't so much as taken a breath, Ping knew that it had heard her. It looked straight into her eyes. Its lips curled back, wrinkling the fur around its nose, making its white whiskers stand on end, baring its huge teeth. The tiger's deep roar reverberated through the trees. The birds stopped singing. No small creatures rustled through the bushes. Everything was silent out of respect for the tiger's terrible strength. She imagined its claws raking deep into her skin, those huge teeth tearing her flesh. The creature was designed to kill. The tiger took a step towards her. Ping looked into its eyes and felt her own power, her own strength. It wasn't her destiny to be killed by a tiger. The creature roared again, then turned and stalked back into the forest. Ping drank from the stream. She should have felt the thread joining her to Kai by now. She hurried back to the path. The sun was low. She had to get to Mingyang Lodge before dark. Ping had started her journey counting the days until she would be with Kai again. Then she had counted the hours. At last, she was able to estimate the time in minutes. She started to run. She was looking for the lights of Mingyang Lodge, but there were none. She had expected the gates to be closed, guards to call out their customary challenge, "Who presumes to disturb the peace of the Son of Heaven?" But the gates were wide open, and the watchtowers empty. Ping walked through the gates. Chapter 25 Blood and Fire. Ping entered the darkened garden of the Purple Dragon. Even in the half-light, it looked like a different place to the one she had left little more than 2 weeks ago. Where there had been garden beds of winter lilies and irises just beginning to open, now there was a huge dark mound of earth. On top of the mound were the smouldering ashes of 5 fires and a large bronze cauldron lying on its side. The surrounding earth was trampled as if a crowd of people had been stamping and dancing on it, but there was no one around. Animal bones and fruit peel littered the ground. Cups and wine jars lay abandoned under shrubs. The smell of cold animal fat and ashes didn't quite overwhelm the pungent traces of incense. Plants had been flattened, tree branches broken. A single duck quacking miserably beside a rubbish-filled pond was the only sign of life. Ping had wondered what sort of reception she would receive when she returned to Mingyang Lodge, but she hadn't expected this. She couldn't understand it. The Emperor's festival to appease heaven wasn't due to start till the following day. Had she lost track of the days? Or had the Emperor been too impatient to wait for the auspicious day that the seers had set? Ping's heart was pounding, panic rising in her throat. She still couldn't feel the thread joining her to Kai. She went inside Mingyang Lodge. It was dark and eerily quiet. She found a lamp and Hua lit it with one of his spitballs. She ran to the dragon quarters. Kai's bed had been stripped of its blankets. His goatskin ball was lying on the floor. She ran to the dining hall. Hua scurried after her. It was empty. So were the kitchens. There were no servants. The pots and kettles were all packed away. The chamber of spreading clouds was just as empty. The furniture was draped with cloths. There were no imperial guards anywhere. She went to the princess's chambers. They were completely bare. The chests and baskets of gowns, the boxes of jewelry and cosmetics were all gone. The wall hangings had been taken down, the mats and cushions removed. She ran along corridors, not knowing where she was going. She became aware of a faint sound. It was like the highest notes of a flute played on a far mountain. Each note was so full of sadness and pain, it made her heart ache. It was Kai. He was calling to her. Something or someone was hurting him. Ping tried to work out where the flute notes were coming from, but the more she listened, the fainter they seemed. She felt a sense of foreboding spread over her like a cold sweat. Something bad was going to happen. She reached into her pouch to touch Dunce's scale to calm herself. Instead, her hand closed around the dragonstone shard. Her mind suddenly focused. It homed in on the faint sound like a well-aimed arrow seeking its target. She could feel the thread at last, tugging her, leading her towards Kai. She put down the lamp and strode forward, eyes closed. What she saw was just a distraction. She didn't stop until a door barred her way. Ping opened her eyes. She knew exactly where she was. Behind the door was the Hall of Peaceful Retreat, where the Longevity Council did their mysterious work, where she had seen the necromancer. She could hear the dragon's voice in her mind, but there were no words, just low, miserable moans. Ping pushed the door open. The room was lit by several lamps. She could see details that had been hidden in the dark on her previous visit. Symbols were painted on the walls, strangely shaped mushrooms, a woman carrying a tray of 7 enormous peaches, the characters for never and decay. Ping recognized the sharp, sour smell from her previous visit. She remembered why it was familiar. She had smelt it in Wuchang. Bowls and jars were spread out on a bench. There was a mortar and pestle where someone had left off grinding tortoiseshell to a powder, an open bamboo book, and some dried plants. The unpleasant smell was coming from bowls containing dark, sinister mixtures. One bowl held a thick, dark liquid in which Ping recognized bird's feet, pine needles, and pieces of dog flesh with fur still attached. Maggots squirmed in it. In another, there was a rancid mixture of pig lard, teasel, and black beetles. Alongside the bowl was a needle threaded with brown silk. This familiar tool seemed out of place. Hua sniffed a third bowl. It contained just one thing, a large bloody liver. This wasn't rotting. It was bathed in fresh blood. A piece had been hacked from it. Ping thought they must have been the elixirs and spells that the Longevity Council was experimenting with. Ping had always been uneasy about Liu Che's obsession with longevity. She had worried about his health. Now, she was concerned more about his souls. But she didn't have time to worry about the Emperor. Kai was all that mattered. The invisible thread pulled her towards the curtained doorway where the necromancer had been hidden on the night that the tower fell. Ping drew the curtain aside. The necromancer wasn't there, but Kai was. There was just enough light from the other room to see him. He was strapped down on a bench. He slowly turned his head towards her. She ran to him. His green eyes were as dull as stagnant water. His lips were the color of old meat. Blood was oozing from a gash in the little dragon's tail. Ping gasped. The edges of the wound had been pinned back to stop it from healing. Drops of purple blood dripped into a flask beneath the bench. Ping. The dragon's voice was faint. Ping pulled the pins out of his tail and ripped the hem from her gown to bandage the wound. She picked Kai up, cradling him in her arms. He was barely conscious. Who did this to you? Tears were running down her face. She couldn't speak without sobbing, so she said the words in her mind. Bad man, Kai replied. She knew who he meant. There would always be those who sought Kai, whether it was for the properties of his body parts or his value in gold. Her job was to protect him from such greedy people. She had failed. She had believed she and Kai were safe. It hadn't occurred to her until it was too late that there might be enemies within the walls of Mingyang Lodge. A feeling of dread struck Ping. She found it hard to breathe. She felt a prickling sensation on the back of her neck. Someone had come into the room, someone who meant to harm Kai. She swung around, scanning the dim corners. She couldn't see anyone. Hua made a sound, a squeal of warning. His fur was standing on end. He reared on his hind legs and launched a spitball. It missed its target, but in the brief flare of fire, Ping saw what the rat had seen. A snake, with black and orange markings, was slithering across the floor. Kai whimpered. Ping could feel his fear, as if it was a solid presence in the room. The snake was more than 6 feet long and as thick as a man's arm. It raised its head. It only had one eye. There was a scar where its other eye should have been. The snake's one yellow eye glinted in the lamplight, staring at Hua. The rat froze. His paws were stuck to the floor, and he seemed unable to drag his eyes away from the yellow eye. Ping had seen a similar yellow glint high on the cliff at Twisting Snake Ravine. It had had that same effect on her. The snake turned away from Hua and towards Ping, its forked tongue darting in and out. The snake started to twist and shimmer. Ping felt her stomach heave as the snake transformed into a cloaked figure with a ginger beard, a tattooed face, and a patch over one eye. He was holding a knife in one hand, a kitchen knife like the ones the imperial cooks used to cut up meat. In his other hand was the hacked-off piece of liver, still dripping blood. Ping had seen the necromancer taken away from Ming Yang Lodge in chains. Somehow he had got free, and he and the imperial magician had banded together. Without thinking, Ping focused her chi on a large jar and sent it flying across the room. It hit the necromancer on the head and smashed to pieces. He sagged to his knees with a groan. Ping's heart leapt. It was the first time she'd felt pleasure at hurting anything. His cloak slipped from his shoulders, and she could see that he was wearing a strange vest. It was made up of flat squares of green jade. There were holes in the corners of each square, and they were linked with what looked like gold wire. Yu Chur had told her about the properties of jade. Important people were buried in suits of jade so that their bodies didn't decay after they died. The jade shielded the corpses from forces trying to attack them. The jade vest had formed a shield which kept the necromancer hidden from her second sight until she was standing an arm's length from him. Claw-like black fingernails reached out for Kai just as they had grasped for the dragonstone in Wu Chung. She held the dragon tighter and summoned her chi power again. Anger burned within her like a pool of molten metal. She had never been so furious in her life. Still on his knees, the necromancer raised the knife ready to throw it. Ping released a burst of chi power. The knife leapt from his hand and clanged against the wall behind him. The tattoo on his face looked more like a tame cat than a fierce wild creature. There was fear in his one eye instead of the hypnotic glint. Ping felt triumph swell within her. She moved towards him, rejoicing in the fact that he was on his knees before her. She got ready to strike again. Her foot collided with something. She looked down. It was an arm. In the dim light, she hadn't seen a body lying on the matting. In the moments that she was distracted, the necromancer picked up a bronze pot and swung it at her, knocking her sideways. Ping hit the floor. It took a moment or two for her eyes to focus. She recognized the body on the floor. It was Saggy Pants. His face was white, his eyes wide and staring, but his skin was still warm. The dragon attendant's jacket was pulled open and his saggy trousers slashed to lay bare his belly. His hands were bound above his head and tied to the bench leg. There was a large hole in the right-hand side of his stomach. Dark blood had formed congealed pools on the bamboo matting around him. Ping remembered the liver in the bowl. From the expression on his face, Ping was sure that the dragon attendant had still been alive when his liver had been cut out of him. She retched, but her stomach was empty. Nothing came out but a trickle of yellow bile. Kai was making a high-pitched keening sound. It was a sound of pain, terror, and desolation. Ping tried to get up. Barbed metal discs spun through the air towards her. The barbs just missed her flesh, but pinned her sleeves to the floor so that she couldn't get up. Her anger changed to fear. Her own power had been smothered like a cupped flame. The necromancer had the threaded needle in his hand. He turned away from her so she couldn't see what he was doing. She heard him groan with pain and hoped she'd hurt him. She had to refocus her chi while he was distracted, gather every shoe of strength and power within her. She wrenched her left arm up from the floor, ripping her sleeve. Then she pulled out the barbed discs that pinned her to the floor. She got to her feet. Ping had never felt such anger. She sent out a bolt of chi, and it was strong, much stronger than anything she'd been able to summon before. The necromancer staggered when it hit him, but when he turned towards her, a sound like a crackling bark came out of his mouth. It was laughter. Bolt after bolt shot from Ping's arm. They were useless. Just a few minutes ago, the necromancer had resorted to hitting her with a bronze pot and using barbed discs to disable her. Something had changed. Now power radiated from him, like heat from a blazing fire. She raised her hand again. "Keep trying," the necromancer laughed as he moved towards her, the knife still in his hand. "You won't be able to bend back my little finger." Ping tried anyway. He sucked her strength from her before she was able to focus it. She couldn't summon a single bolt of chi. His one eye stared at her. She looked away. She had to avoid his stare. She had to escape, or she would end up like the unfortunate dragon attendant. She couldn't help Kai if she were dead. What little strength she had left, she used to run to the door and didn't look back. She ran down corridors, upstairs, turning this way and that in the vain hope that she would lose the necromancer. She found herself outside the Emperor's private quarters. It was forbidden to enter without being invited in by the Emperor, but the chambers were almost at the top of Mingyang Hill. There was nowhere else to go. She entered with the smallest hope that Liu Che might be there and would help her. The lattice doorways leading to the balcony were all closed. The sky was overcast. The lotus patterns of light on the matting were only faint grey. No lamps were lit. The furniture was draped with cloth. The feeling of dread hit her so hard it knocked her off her feet. All hope drained from her. She turned around. The necromancer was standing in the doorway, his mouth twisted into a smile that had nothing to do with joy or happiness. Ping shuddered. His one eye glinted at her. It bored into her like a drill. She couldn't tear her gaze away. She could see deep into his evil souls. And what she saw made her very afraid. His eye released her, but she still couldn't get up. All she could see were the wooden floorboards squashed up against her face. The necromancer was still laughing, relishing his victory over her. He held the knife in front of him. As she stared at the dark floorboards, something appeared through one of the knot holes. It was so close that she couldn't get it into focus. Then she saw that it was a trembling pink nose. A set of whiskers followed, then two bright blue eyes and two ears, one with a chunk missing. Hua had recovered and found her. He somehow managed to squeeze his body through the hole. The sight of the rat helped her find a little strength. Just a trace, like a drop of water in an empty bucket. The necromancer walked unhurriedly across the room. He knelt down beside Ping and held the knife blade against her belly. An unlit lamp was the only thing in reach that she could use as a weapon. She grabbed it and struck him on the head. Oil ran into his eyes and onto his cloak. He swung the knife blindly at Ping. She rolled aside but felt a searing pain as the blade slashed her right arm. There was a flash, followed a moment later by another. Hua was launching his spitballs. The necromancer's cloak suddenly burst into flame. He let out a howl of pain and fear as the flames flicked up his face. He fought to undo the cloak's clasp. His cry sounded like music to Ping. The necromancer flung his burning cloak from him. Flames spread to a cushion and then to a rug. The fire raced across the bamboo matting faster than a galloping horse. It flared up between Ping and the necromancer. Ping felt a wave of relief. He couldn't get to her. but the fire also cut off any chance of escape. Through smoke and flames, Ping saw the necromancer turn and stride out of the room. As she ran out onto the balcony, she could feel the heat on the back of her neck. Tongues of fire were already licking through the latticework of the doors. She looked around frantically. There was no escape. Behind her was the roaring fire. In front was a drop of four Chang to the courtyard below. Hua clawed his way up the back of her gown. He knew what she had to do. She leapt over the scarlet balustrade. There was no other choice. Ping fell headfirst. She could hear a tinkling sound over the rush of air. It was the waterfall that tumbled down the hillside into a pool far below. She felt a surge of joy. The pool would break her fall. She looked down. Her relief changed to panic. The pool wasn't directly below her. She would hit the ground and break her neck. She closed her eyes. Something smacked into her. It wasn't as hard as earth, but intense pain shot through her chest. She'd fallen into the branches of a willow tree. They didn't break, but bent beneath her weight. She reached out and wrapped her arms around as many of the tree's drooping branches as she could. They slipped through her embrace, but they had slowed her fall. She grasped hold of one strong willow bough. It didn't snap. It bent and flexed like a length of rope and took her weight. She used the momentum of her fall to swing out over the pool. Then she let go of the branch. The slap of the water was painful, but she was more concerned about drowning. She thrashed about in the water trying to keep her head above the surface. She sank down until she bumped against the slippery, algae-covered bottom of the pool. She didn't allow herself to panic. She remembered how she had floated up through the green waters of the well with Kai. She pushed herself off the bottom and kicked her legs. As she resurfaced, she clutched a strangely shaped rock that jutted out of the water. Hua swam up to her. She caught her breath and then splashed her way to the edge of the pool. Ping dragged herself out of the water. Spots of blood were dripping into the pool. Ping ripped a strip from her sleeve and bandaged her arm as best she could with one hand. She had to ignore the pain. She picked up Hua and put him in her gown. Far above her, the fire lit up the night sky. Orange flames were engulfing the balustrades of the Emperor's balcony. She had escaped from the necromancer. But Kai was still inside the blazing lodge. Chapter 26 Muddy Waters. The pain in Ping's chest made it difficult to run. She knew a little about the arrangement of bones in a body from butchering goats for Master Lan. One of her ribs had broken in the fall. As she stumbled towards the lower buildings of Mingyang Lodge, her feet seemed to move in slow motion. Sparks showered down from the fire above. Other buildings had started to burn. If the servants and the Imperial Guards had been there, they might have been able to control the fire. But the flames were spreading unchecked, to the kitchens, to the princess's chambers. Whichever way Ping turned, the fire kept driving her back. She couldn't get near the Hall of Peaceful Retreat. The entire lodge, every building, every pavilion, every piece of furniture was made of wood. Like a ravenous monster, the fire devoured everything in its path. Nothing was going to stop it. Ping's mind was a chaos of nightmare images, of the dead dragon attendant, of the necromancer's grinning face, of burning buildings, of Kai, limp and bleeding. She couldn't find the end of the fragile thread that joined her to the dragon. Her second sight searched blindly, but found nothing. Ping felt in her pouch for the shard of dragonstone. It wasn't there. Her silk pouch had been ripped, probably by the willow branches, and the shard had fallen out. She had only just come to understand its power to focus her mind, and now she'd lost it. She should have kept the sturdy leather pouch that she'd had since Huang Ling instead of accepting the flimsy silk one. It was just another mistake to add to the long list of mistakes she'd made. Despair enveloped her like a black shroud. Ping had no power over the five elements. She couldn't fight fire. All she could do was watch the lodge burn. The smoke made her eyes sting. Tears streamed down her face. The dawn light revealed a desolate landscape. The imperial chambers were reduced to blackened ruins. Flames still licked and curled around the lower buildings. The trees were bare of all but a few scorched leaves. The lotus leaves on the ponds had withered. The smoke from the burning buildings had shriveled the flowers. Not long ago, Ping had wanted the necromancer to die a horrible death. Now, she was praying he had escaped the fire. It was the only way Kai could have survived. Ping crawled through the thick black smoke that threatened to choke her, as it had everything that had grown in the garden. She made her way down Mingyang Hill, past Late Spring Villa, until she found herself on the banks of the Yellow River. The river rushed by, eager to get to ocean, unaware of the devastated lodge or her misery. Its muddy waters were as impenetrable as ever, stretching as far as she could see and giving no clue as to what lay beneath the surface. Ping drank some of the yellowish water and tried to wash the smoke from her eyes. Crouched on the riverbank, she tried to shut out the horrors of the night. She couldn't. Saggy Pants was dead. The Imperial Lodge was destroyed. The necromancer had overpowered her. Then there was the most important thing, the one she was trying to keep out of her mind because it was unbearable. "I can't feel the thread," she said to Hua. Her second sight was unreliable. It came and went like a flame flickering in a breeze. She didn't know how to control it. She felt sensations, but didn't know their meaning. It was like trying to peer through the muddy waters of the river. The only thing she wanted to feel was the connection between her and Kai, but it wasn't there. Hua crawled inside the folds of her gown. She curled up, trying to shut out the ugly, blackened world and her failure. "I found her," a voice said. Ping opened her eyes. A breeze had thinned the smoke. She didn't know how long she'd been there. An Imperial guard was looking down at her. There were footsteps, and other guards came along the path. Minister Ji was among them. "I've been searching for you for over an hour," he said crossly. "How did you know I was back at Mingyang Lodge?" The minister didn't answer. He turned and walked away. "Follow me," he said. His calmness infuriated Ping. She wanted to stand up and shake him, but she didn't have the strength. She grabbed hold of the hem of his gown. "I've lost Kai," she sobbed. This time the tears weren't because of the smoke. Minister Ji brushed her hands from his gown as if they were a pair of spiders. "Your distress is entirely unnecessary," the minister said. "The Imperial Dragon is with the Emperor. I have been instructed to take you to him." Ping couldn't believe her ears. "But I saw him." Ping tried to think how long ago it had been. It seemed like days, but it couldn't have been more than a few hours. He was weak and bleeding. The necromancer had him. "The Emperor did not instruct me to stand and argue the point with you." He turned round and strode off along the path. Ting followed. Minister Ji seemed unconcerned about the ruined lodge. "Ming Yang Lodge is burning," she said. She needed to confirm that she wasn't going mad, that she hadn't imagined the fire. "Most unfortunate," Minister Ji agreed. "Rebuilding it will be an expense the Empire could do without." The minister walked calmly and without hurry away from Ming Yang Hill. Ping tried to rearrange the facts in her head so that they made sense. How had Minister Ji known that she was back at Ming Yang Lodge? Who had rescued Kai? It was like trying to fit together the pieces of two broken jars that were jumbled together. Nothing fitted. Nothing made sense. They came to a small inlet cut into the riverbank where a boat was tied up away from the rush of the river. "Where are you taking me?" Ping said. The minister didn't answer. He walked up the gangplank. Ping followed him. The boat was smaller than the one that had carried her and Dancer down the Yellow River. But this one had a team of 10 rowers, each wearing nothing but a pair of short trousers. The skin of their muscled arms was taut and shiny. With so many rowers, Ping thought that they must have been going back up the river against the current. Minister Ji sat down in the middle of the boat and arranged his gown. Ping collapsed next to him. Hua wriggled inside the folds of her gown. A boatman untied the boat and pushed it out into the rushing current. At his command, the rowers dipped their oars into the water and started rowing for all they were worth. They weren't rowing upstream against the current, nor were they allowing the river to carry the boat downstream. They were rowing across the river. Their muscles flexed as they plunged their oars into the yellow water again and again. They chanted a song to help keep their oar strokes in time. The boat made its way slowly across the great river, but Ping could feel the current pulling them downstream at the same time. The river must have been at least 4 li wide. As they got closer to the opposite bank, she could see a bamboo thicket. The bamboo canes grew right to the water's edge. They reached up to the grey sky, and the newly grown tips bent back and forth in the wind as if they couldn't decide which way to go. Ping could see no buildings among the bamboo, no dock that the boat was heading for. Meanwhile, the current tugged them further and further downstream. If they were rowing across to a dock on the opposite bank, they would miss it. Neither Minister Ji nor the rowers seemed concerned. The rhythm of the oars dipping into the water never varied. The opposite bank was now only a few chang away. Something large and black loomed into view. It was the Imperial barge. Ping was suddenly aware of Kai. It was faint, but she could feel his presence again. Hope swelled within her. He was nearby. The rowers dipped their oars into the water with the exact same rhythm. Another 10 and 5 strokes brought them to the dock, where the Imperial barge was moored. The 2 mooring sites on either side of the river had been built to take into account the pull of the current and the strength of the rowers. The barge hadn't been repainted in the new Imperial yellow. It was still black. Bearers were busy unloading chests and baskets from the barge and stacking them on the dock, where a wide road led off to the north. Some of the chests looked familiar. Ping followed Minister Ji up the gangplank, her legs shaky with fatigue and anticipation. The deck was crowded with ministers, guards, and servants. Liu Che was sitting on a throne on the deck. He was so thin that his gown hung off him. He was sitting with the heel of one gold-embroidered shoe resting on the opposite knee, as if nothing unusual had happened. Kai was on a satin cushion at the Emperor's side. He lifted his head as if it took a great effort. "Ping," said the dragon. Ping was so relieved to see him again, she didn't care what she had been through. Minister Ji bowed to the emperor and took his place with the other imperial ministers. Ping tried to go to the dragon, but guards barred her way. "Are you all right, Kai?" She spoke to the dragon with her mind. "Kai, okay." His flute sounds were faint. Dongfang Suo was on his knees before the emperor. "You are stripped of your position as imperial magician," the emperor announced. Ping felt her heart lift. She didn't have to tell Yuche about Dongfang Suo's treachery. He already knew. The old magician crouched in front of the emperor like a beaten dog. His face looked as crumpled as his gown. Ping glared at him triumphantly. At last she could rest. The emperor would take care of things. She bowed before him. "Dongfang Suo left me to die, your imperial majesty," Ping said. "I was crushed by a falling boulder. It wasn't an accident. He's in league with the necromancer." "Be silent," Minister Ji snapped. "The emperor did not give you permission to speak." Guards pushed her to her knees and forced her head to the deck. Ping waited for Liu Che to tell the minister she could speak, but the emperor said nothing. She turned her head so that she could see him. His eyes were as cold as polished stones, his mouth a thin, straight line. His hollow cheeks made him look older and sinister. "I'm not very happy with Dongfang Suo either," the emperor said. "I told him to make sure you were dead." Ping thought she couldn't have heard him properly. "I have appointed a new imperial magician." The emperor waved his hand. Dread extinguished Ping's anger. It was as if every beautiful thing in the empire had suddenly ceased to exist. She turned her head the other way. The necromancer was climbing the stairs from below decks. He was wearing a magnificent black cape woven with red. Beneath it, she glimpsed the jade vest. On his head, he wore a ministerial cap. He had a red raw burn on one side of his face. Ping lunged towards him, ready to strangle him, to gouge out his one eye for what he had done to Kai. 4 imperial guards grabbed her and held her back. The necromancer sat down on a carved chair. "What is he doing here? You don't know what he's done." Ping tried to free herself from the guards. "He killed the dragon attendant. He tried to kill me. He hurt Kai." "The necromancer was following my orders," said the emperor. His voice was as cold and sharp as icicles. "But you captured him. I saw him in chains." The emperor laughed. "A little performance for your benefit, Ping. To stop you from prying where you weren't supposed to." Ping's brain stopped trying to make sense of the illogical world. There was a line of ants crossing the deck. She watched them hurrying along, one after the other. "I have appointed physicians to monitor the dragon's health," the emperor said calmly. "They are devising a special blood-restoring diet so that he can be bled, but stay alive." A sneer disfigured Liu Che's handsome face. He smoothed the crease from his yellow gown. "When the Touching Heaven Tower fell, I knew that there was disorder in the universe. I did not need my seers to tell me that heaven was unhappy with some aspect of my reign. But no one could tell me what it was. I had to discover the truth myself." Liu Che looked at her as if she was as insignificant as the ant. "It is you, Ping. You are what has disrupted the order of the universe. You have offended heaven." "Me?" There has never been a female dragon keeper, the emperor continued. It is against the laws of nature. There is no prophecy in the bamboo books. No omens predicted such an unnatural event. Ping looked at Kai, limp and wounded, without the strength to stand. Her tears dried up. The misery and betrayal that filled her were replaced with rage. That's not true, she said. Dunsa believed I was his dragon keeper. He chose me to care for Kai. Do you think I would trust the word of one senile old dragon against the advice of all my ministers and the wisdom contained in the bamboo books handed down for generations? The emperor said. The grain crops are failing. Silkworm moths aren't laying eggs. There are floods in the south. It's all your fault, Ping. Ping was too stunned to speak. No one had the right to disrespect Dunsa. Not even the emperor. Ping pushed the guards aside and stood eye to eye with the emperor. It isn't me who has disturbed the harmony of the world, Ping shouted. The emperor rose. Ever since you took the role of dragon keeper upon yourself, things have gone wrong, he said. The old dragon escaped. My father was struck by a fatal illness. The touching heaven tower fell. I knew I had to restore the balance to the universe, but I couldn't leave the dragon without a keeper. You helped me solve that problem, Ping, when you suggested I look for another dragon keeper. Soon as I heard that a boy had been found, I ordered your execution. It's your obsession that has disrupted the harmony of the universe, she shouted. She didn't care if Liu Che was the son of heaven. At first, you just wanted to stay young. Then you wanted to live for 1,000 years. Now you want to live forever. You're the one who has offended heaven. The emperor's gaunt face was red with rage, his eyes full of hatred. He stepped towards her. Ping flinched, thinking he was going to hit her, but instead he reached for the seal hanging from her waist. He gave it a sharp tug. The ribbon snapped. He looked at the chipped and grubby seal lying in his hand. You are no longer entitled to wear this seal, he said. I have made another new appointment. The new Imperial Dragon Keeper. The minister stepped aside. A small figure moved nervously towards the emperor. It was Jun. Instead of his ragged clothes, he wore a pale green robe. The emperor held out the seal to him. Jun took the seal from the emperor with shaking hands, almost dropping it, and bowed. I will serve you well, Your Imperial Majesty, Jun said. The boy took his place next to Kai, resting his hand on the dragon's scaly back. He had something in his other hand, something flat and round which caught the sunlight. It was the Dragon Keeper's mirror. Kai moved closer to Jun. Boy is Kai's friend, he said. He was making happy flute sounds. Fatso has planned for Ping. Kai, help Fatso. The little dragon's words seared Ping's heart like red-hot coals. Her legs gave way, and she collapsed to her knees. Now order has been restored to the universe, the emperor announced. But the necromancer... Ping stammered. The necromancer understands that uncommon steps must be taken to achieve great things. The longevity council was wasting time quibbling over ingredients like women in a kitchen, just as the scientists did. When I heard about the necromancer, I knew he had to be in my service. I have you to thank for that, Ping, the emperor said. In the end, I didn't have to find the necromancer. He presented me with an offer. The necromancer looked down at Dongfang Suo, who was still crouching on the deck. "You are weak, Dong. You and your council only offered the emperor long life. I guaranteed him immortality." "He bled Kai," Ping said, but even her voice had lost its strength. "This is why I had to replace you," the empress sneered. "Your first allegiance should have been to me, not the dragon. The necromancer bled the dragon on my orders." Ping's head was reeling. She couldn't believe what she was hearing. The emperor's voice was growing impatient. "Kai isn't just a spoiled pet to amuse the imperial household. His purpose is to serve the emperor. If you were really the imperial dragon keeper, Ping, you would have realized long ago that dragon's blood is the key ingredient in the elixir of immortality. Kai will be revered as the last imperial dragon. He will live in luxury for 1,000 years or more in my service and give his blood to me. That is his duty as imperial dragon." "You can't," said Ping feebly. "It's not right." He waved his hand as if brushing away a fly. "I don't have to justify my actions to a slave girl. The necromancer says that to ensure that heaven forgives me for my error in appointing you as dragon keeper, you must be sacrificed." Yu Che's eyes were shining with a sort of madness. Ping could no longer see any trace of her friend. The ribbon of friendship between them had always been a fragile thing. It had frayed before and been mended. But Ping realized now that nothing she could say would heal the rift between them. The emperor was willing to risk Kai's life to make him suffer centuries of pain in his foolish pursuit of immortality. She could never be his friend. Dongfang Suo was looking at her, moving his caterpillar eyebrows up and down alternately. His mouth moved. Ping had no idea what he could possibly want to say to her. If he was trying to apologize, it was too late. A guard brought a spear down across his back. The sound of several trumpets repeating the same short refrain came from the riverbank. No one on board seemed surprised to hear it. The music stopped and was replaced by the sound of horses' hooves. 6 men wearing blue and gold tunics came riding down the north road on black horses. Each man held a trumpet to his lips. They sounded the refrain again. Soldiers on foot followed behind them. Blue and gold pennants fluttered from the butts of their spears. Behind them were dark, foreign men leading strange creatures which were bigger than horses and had long, curved necks and 2 humps on their backs. They were ugly beasts that made unpleasant grunting noises. Ping had never seen anything like them before. The soldiers on the riverbank parted to make way for another man on horseback. He was about 6 times 10 years, and his winged headdress was similar to those worn by imperial ministers. His horse wore a blue plume on its head. The man looked up at the emperor with an unsmiling face. He got down from his horse, dusted off his tunic, and strode up the gangplank. The emperor stood up. "Welcome, Duke of Yan."
"Your Imperial Majesty," the duke said without bowing.
The emperor ignored this discourtesy and turned to Minister Ji. "Tell Princess Yang Xin that the duke has arrived." The minister bowed and went below decks. Ping realized that the baskets and chests on the dock were those she had seen in the princess's chambers. Princess Yang Xin herself appeared. Her gown was made of fine hemp, the same shade of blue as the duke's soldiers' tunics, and trimmed with gold. Over it, she wore a padded coat. A headscarf covered her lovely hair. Lady An and her other ladies-in-waiting were dressed in a similar way.
"I am ready to return to my husband and beg his forgiveness," the princess said in a calm voice as she bowed before the duke. She didn't look at Ping. If you can forgive my mistakes, my lord, she said, I will be an obedient wife.
The Duke's stern face softened as he looked down at the top of Princess Yangxin's head.
Do you have the treaty documents?
The Duke asked the Emperor. Minister Qi sent a servant to get a table. He produced a scroll from his sleeve. The Duke read the document and held up the seal that was hanging around his waist. Minister Qi produced a pot of seal ink from his other sleeve. The Duke dipped his seal into the ink and pressed it onto the scroll. The Emperor and the Duke bowed stiffly to each other. Minister Qi shouted an order, and servants brought tables up from below decks and set them ready for a banquet. The Emperor gestured for the Duke to sit on one side of him, the necromancer to sit on the other. Guards dragged Ping below deck to a hold stacked with sacks of grain and jars of wine. They bound her hands and feet and left her. The Emperor's words echoed in Ping's head. The old emperor had died soon after he ate the dragon pickle that she had helped to make. Dancer had not been happy at Huang Ling, but after she helped him escape, he became so sick and injured that he had to leave the empire and fly to the Isle of the Blessed. The touching heaven tower had fallen on the very night she was snooping around against the emperor's wishes. She tried to think of what she could have done that would have made things turn out differently. Should she have tried to sail after Dancer? Should she have stayed on Tai Shan? Should she have drunk the star dew so she could live for 1,000 years? The sounds of music and voices came from the deck above. The smells of the banquet found their way to the hold. No one brought her food or water. Time crept by with the slow steps of a tortoise. The banquet lasted until the light faded. The sacks and jars grew indistinct and then disappeared into blackness. The sounds of movement on the deck above her gradually stopped. More time passed, and a bar of silvery moonlight crept down into the depths of the hull. Ping heard the quick, scratchy scurrying of a rat. She was aware that Hua was no longer in the folds of her gown. Is that you, Hua? There were more ratty footsteps. The moonlight provided enough light for Ping to see that there were several rats, the ordinary-sized ones that lived in the small, dark places between the barge's timbers. None of them were Hua. The band of moonlight made its unhurried way towards her, as if determined to illuminate her in all her misery. When the light reached her torn and stained gown, she could see the faintest glow coming from her pouch. She could just reach in it with her stiff, bound hands. She pulled something from the inner pocket of her pouch. It was the size of a large leaf, but thicker and with a rough, scratchy surface. In the moonlight, it glowed a soft green. She brought her hands up to her face so that she could smell it. It had the faintest aroma of overripe plums and fish brine. It was the dragon's scale. Her arm was throbbing from the knife wound. There was a searing pain in her chest. It felt as if someone were jabbing her cramped legs all over with sewing needles. What would Dancer think if he could see her now? She had failed completely to care for his son. She felt sleep come for her. Shouldn't she be trying to get free? Shouldn't she be thinking of a plan to rescue Kai? She just didn't know anymore. Chapter 27 The Power of Five. The dragon was standing in a circle of moonlight. He was glowing, full of the moon's brightness. He turned towards her. His red lips smiled. Dancer,
You told me I was the true Dragon Keeper, and I'm not.
Ah.
But everything's gone wrong, and now I have no one.